KALW.
From elementary school all the way to junior high school, I was having problems in school with my education. I just hated it.
Andre Davis is about to get a college degree at San Quentin, but he wasn't always a good student.
I wanted to do something where my family can be like, you know what? He took a situation and he made it better for himself.
Today, a new story from Uncuffed. Then we get an update on how the Oakland A's have played during their last season in the Bay.
Said at the open of the broadcast today that it was the last time that we would say the visiting Oakland Athletics. And it is.
And we'll hear a reading from Oakland author Daniel Gambiner. Plus a sneak peek into the upcoming season of our teen series, TBH. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. If you've ever gotten a bad grade on an assignment or failed a class, you may know the feeling, a mix of embarrassment, anger, or shame. For Andre Davis, one of his earliest memories of school is that feeling when his teacher told him he didn't pass the first grade. It set off a complicated relationship with education that he's worked hard to change. Uncuffed producer Will Harris interviewed Andre about how he got from that first grade experience to becoming a future college graduate.
She flunked me. And I was like, really sad about that.
The teacher flunked you from the first grade.
She flunked your boy, man. She flunked your boy in the first grade. And my mother was picking me up that day. And so I was crying, walking to the car. My mom was like, what's wrong with you, boy? I was like, Mom, they flunked me. They flunked me. She said, what you mean they flunked you? I didn't pass. It's going to be okay. And I was crying like, Mama, they flunked me. And I was really crying about that. I remember I was very emotional that day. And I was embarrassed, too. You know, all my friends passed and I didn't pass. I think that was the reason why, at the time, why I didn't like school. And, you know, I was a people pleaser. You know, I wanted everybody to like me. And I was a little bit of, you know, clown of the class. And my teacher, she couldn't stand that. And instead of her trying to help me, trying to get my education, and on the first grade level, right, she didn't help me none. My mother couldn't help me. She didn't help me. From elementary school all the way to junior high school, right, I was having problems in school with my education. I just hated it, right? And so I would do certain works, but it wasn't enough. Like, I'd get a D minus or a C, you know what I'm saying? And they would pass me to the next grade. Even right now, I'm kind of embarrassed because, you know, everybody be like, damn, you flunked the first grade, and they can't understand that.
What's the last grade you finished?
Last grade I finished, I think, was the seventh grade, junior high school.
The last grade you finished was seventh grade?
And I didn't walk the stage. That's also the same day I ended up going to juvenile hall. I was mad because I didn't graduate, and I wasn't allowed to go to the ceremony. So me and my friends went up to the school to cause mischief because I was angry, I was hurt. And we was, you know, running around the class being, you know, mischievous. Security kicked us out of the school. And I went somewhere else and got caught up in a robbery. LAPD had chased us and I got caught. And I went to juvenile camp for that. The same day, the kids at my school had walked the stage and I didn't. You know, I've been in and out of jail since I was 9 years old. So it's like, you know, juvenile halls. And I never went to YA, but I went to camp. And then from camp, I went from prison. While I was sitting in prison, I was like really like, was on hard on myself. Like, man, like, this is what my life has became. It's been times where, you know, you sit and you think of your own thoughts. And I'm laying in my bunk. And I was thinking, like, man, this is it. And this is how I was telling myself. I was telling myself, this is it. Like, this is your life right here. You finna be in prison for a long period of time. What you gonna do? I don't know. It was just something that told me, like, man, you need to try to do something better with yourself. In this, even though I was going through a lot of situations, a lot of stuff in prison, but I just wanted to change myself. I just wanted to do better. I just want people to proud. I want my family to be proud of me, you know, because I know my mother wasn't proud of me for being in prison, and everybody else in my family wasn't proud of me. So I wanted to do something where my family can be like, you know what? He took a situation and he made it better for himself. And I was thinking about my mother. I was thinking about my kids. I was thinking about, you know, and a lot of my family. I just wanted them to be, I wanted them to look at me and say, you know, I see what you're going through, but at least you're trying to do something to better yourself. And the first thing that came on my mind was to go to school, right? And that's what made me want to go back to school. I was kind of bummed out about that. Like, I didn't have a GED. So I was like, man, I'm getting my GED. I was in CMC East. And I got in class and I had a good teacher, and right? And he just motivated me to keep on going.
Tell me how you decided that you were ready to get your AA, your associate's degree.
When I came to San Quentin, I seen everybody work, you know, going to school, going to college. And I said, you know what? I want that next. So I got 4 more classes left. So I got algebra, and which is a doozy, boy.
I'm in algebra myself.
Algebra, something else. Ooh, that math 115, man, right? So I got that. And then I have American government that I have to do, and like 2 more electives. And then after that, I graduate. I should be graduating by next year.
So how does that feel?
It feels good. You know, my mother's proud of me. There's a lot of people, they proud of me.
So what does Andre 2024 say to Andre 1970, late 70s, first grade Andre?
I would tell him, man, look, keep your head up, Lil Dre. You know, everything gonna be all right, man. Stop trying to get people to like you so much, man. You know, love yourself, man. You know, just work hard. If you want to be something in your life, you can. Ask somebody to help you. It's going to be okay. Just keep on pushing. You know what I mean? God got you.
That was Andre Davis speaking with Will Harris, a producer in the Uncuffed program at San Quentin. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and listeners like you. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can hear more by going to kalw.org or subscribe to Uncuffed on your podcast player. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. This is the last month the A's will be playing in Oakland. Next up, we'll hear how their imminent departure feels for a local that grew up a stone's throw away from the Coliseum. But first, an update on their recent games. It's the next episode of Foul Ball. Here's host KALW's Sunni Khalid.
The Athletics are back in the Coliseum this week for their penultimate homestand. The A's hosted the Mariners on Labor Day before a respectable crowd of more than 12,000 fans. The score was knotted 4-4 entering the ninth inning. The A's had lost consecutive walk-off games to the Reds in Cincinnati. Now it was time for Oakland to return the favor as catcher Shea Longalier stepped to the plate in the bottom of the ninth.
Let's set the scene for you, folks, shall we? 4-4 the score, bottom of the ninth inning, divisional matchup in the series opener here at the Coliseum. Shea Longalier will be the first man to come up against a new Mariners reliever in Austin Voth, trying to win the game. Swing and a drive, deep to left. Shea has become judge, jury, and executioner. Langoliers, a two-homer afternoon, picks up his first career walk-off hit, and the A's win the series opener, 5-4. After three walk-off losses on the road in this last road trip, the A's respond and pick up a very big and fun win.
The win lifted the A's record to 30-22 since July 1st, the third best record in the American League. Oakland is now in fourth place in the West Division, a couple games ahead of the slumping Los Angeles Angels. Despite the encouraging news on the field, the countdown phase of the A's departure from Oakland has entered its final weeks. The team's last game at the Coliseum against the defending World Series champion Texas Rangers is on September 26th. The significance of A's last game in the Coliseum wasn't lost on Rangers TV announcers during a telecast of a game against Oakland last week.
Said at the open of the broadcast today that it was the last time that we would say the visiting Oakland Athletics, and it is. It's the last time that the A's come to town from Oakland.
In the last episode, I spoke with Jorge Leon, one of the organizers of the Oakland 68s, local fan base group that has been leading a series of spirited protests against A's owner John Fisher.
But we do know this, next year, they will not be the Oakland A's.
This week, I spoke with Laura Skaggs, who grew up in East Oakland, a stone's throw away from the Coliseum, about the A's imminent departure from her neighborhood and hometown.
You're a longtime resident of East Oakland. Where are you located and how far are you from the Coliseum?
My house is 7 minutes away from the Coliseum.
When do you remember when the A's moved to East Oakland?
All
what
of it.
What was it like? What do you remember about the A's coming to East Oakland and the novelty?
I can't say that I actually remember when they came, but clearly my dad took me whenever that was to my very first game there. And I've been going my whole life, bottom line.
Right. So you grew up with the A's.
Sure. I learned baseball by listening to the radio with my grandmother.
Really? Well, who were your favorite players back then?
Reggie Jackson, always, every time.
Why Reggie?
Because I thought he was handsome and I was a little girl. But I also played outfield. I played softball. So I liked to play out there and I used to sit in the right field stands and scream at him as if he knew who I was.
People talk about the Raiders taking on the persona of Oakland and of East Oakland, but that was also the case with those old A's when they first got here.
Oh, for sure. It stays the same. What is the 68th Avenue, whatever, those folks over there. There's diehard people. I mean, I'm one of them in my own way. I'll put it that way.
Back then, I guess the players had much more of a connection. It was a different time. So you used to see the players, used to bump into them around town, right?
To some degree, every once in a while. And then you could, like, after games, you could watch them where their cars were parked. You could kind of see, and you would watch them walk out, you know, like they were real people instead of just athletes.
The A's were the first modern professional sports dynasty in the Bay Area. They won those three championships.
Yeah, I would say that's true. That's very true. And I was a little kid at the time. I remember watching the World Series in school. Like, we had a little black and white TV and the teacher brought it in so we could watch the game.
Well, you're 7 minutes away. You could almost hear the roar of the stadium, couldn't you?
Well, I can see that the fireworks sitting on my couch or on my front porch if I open my windows. And I definitely can hear it all every time. I'm not going to miss the sound. I'll miss the sights, but not the sounds.
What has it been for the last few years is basically we've been watching the A's under John Fisher in a death spiral or almost in a countdown to leave East Oakland and to leave the Bay Area. What has that been like?
It's been nerve-wracking, to be honest. I mean, I was hopeful that they might get the other stadium, but I didn't really think that was a good idea anyway, because you have a stadium right here, tear this old one down and build a new one on the same footprint and, you know, have the BART station, have the connectivity of transportation, and also keeping it in East Oakland. What does West Oakland have to do with anything around the A's? So it's been kind of pins and needles and then disappointment and hope and all the gamut of emotions for me. But I have to be honest, this year has been, it's really been emotional for me. This is something I've grown up with, and my best friend and I attend the games every year, opening night, and been doing that since I was in seventh grade. And so this year, she and I, neither one of us wanted to go because we're just so disappointed in the team, and not in the team, in the ownership.
What are you going to lose personally when they just move out? What is East Oakland going
oh my goodness.
To lose?
I'm losing decades of memories of, you know, going to the games. I think people in my neighborhood, for sure, lots of people have worked at the Coliseum over the years. One particular person two doors down from me used to sell beer and pizza. And, you know, he and I kind of talk about it. He's given that up and has gone over to Giants games just to make more money because there was just not enough people coming to the A's games. So, again, it's a really huge part of my growing up and being a baseball fan and then more specifically being an A's fan. It gets really emotional for me. And I think, again, the neighborhood is going to suffer even more than it already has. I also do some, or was doing some consulting for the Oakland Roots, the soccer team. And they're going to be in the Coliseum next year, which is great to hear. But soccer is a different game. And I think they're going to allow up to 15,000 fans at a time. But I know they're not going to catch on as quickly as they're hoping.
What's going to be your most poignant memory of the A's once they leave?
I'll say going to the World Series with my dad and my mom, and then we had to kick her out because she didn't understand baseball. But then I'll say even bigger than that, literally my best friend and I since seventh grade, going to opening nights. She's had three kids. I've had one. She's lived in D.C. and Georgia. She's flown in so we could go to the games. And we've missed this year and we missed last year. We didn't go to the very first opening, went to the second game. But that's like my diehard thing. And I've done with her, you know, all these years. We ended up in the newspaper once, the North Oakland something news article. She took our pictures and talked to us about, you know, how long we've been coming to games. So that's probably my bigger memory because it's longer.
Well, how has your neighborhood changed as the A's have, you know, sort of declined and, you know, got ready to pick up stakes and go elsewhere?
You know, I won't say my direct, you know, couple of blocks around me have necessarily changed, but anything from East 14th, you know, toward the Coliseum, it just, you know, it's becoming another type of a different type of desert, basically. Many of the stores have closed on East 14th or International Boulevard, as it's now known. And I don't know. I just think that it's a huge loss to the community in general. Like I said, a lot of people have had jobs there. And I honestly was planning for that to be my retirement job. And now I'm mad.
Do you blame anybody for the fact that the A's are leaving and the Raiders before them?
The city of Oakland has gotten punked by all three teams. I'm disappointed in the city. I'm disappointed in the county. I'm disappointed in everybody who made deals about the Raiders leaving and then the Raiders coming back, and then they've never done anything to clean up the actual stadium. So it's just a mess. It's always been a mess, but at least we had our team, and now we don't even have that. So
are you going to root for them when they go to Sacramento? Are you going to go to any games in Sacramento?
Well, you know, the friend that I go to the games with actually lives outside of Sacramento, not too far away from where they're going to play. And I think we probably will go to at least one game so we can complain. But it's hotter than heaven out there. So I don't know why anybody want to go play baseball in 100-some-degree weather.
Well, I got some news for you. You know, there's What's a minor league team. There's a Giants team. Their minor league team is up there.
Yeah.
But check this out. You're going to love this, Laura. They're going to rip up that natural turf, and they're going to put artificial turf on that field. You know how?
How is that better?
You know how hot Sacramento gets, so it might be 85 or 90 at the stands, but I can tell you it's going to be triple digits out there on the field.
Right. Makes no sense. And plus, baseball should be played on grass. Come on.
Dick Allen said, if a cow can't eat it, I don't want to play on it.
I like that.
Do you think they're going to end up in Las Vegas, and would you go see them in Las Vegas?
Maybe for the novelty of it, because I've never been to a brand new stadium. So, yeah, maybe, but it's not like on my bucket list.
Now, you have a daughter. Now, she's college age.
Mm-hmm.
But does she have any connection to the A's? Do any of the younger kids in your neighborhood have any connection to the
A's? I think some of the younger kids, some of the boys for sure. And we've got some neighbors that are pretty diehard Oakland fans, too. My daughter's not very much into sports anyway. She likes to come because she can get pizza and then she's ready to go like the third inning.
Thank you.
That was East Oakland resident Laura Skaggs speaking with KALW News editor Sunni Khalid. You can find the rest of the Foul Ball series at KALW.org/foulball. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. On Monday, a fire broke out in Sierra County that's already burned 1,300 acres. Up next, we'll hear a reading from an Oakland author that understands the devastating impact of wildfires. It's a reading from New Arrivals, our pocket-sized book tour. Oakland author Daniel Gumbiner reads from his book called Fire in the Canyon.
It's the story of a family in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada and what happens to them after a wildfire moves through their town. I'm going to read a passage here from the end of the book that describes the experience of living through a fire season. On the best of days during the fire season, it was often on their minds. But when there were outages, when they knew a red flag warning was posted, it was particularly bad. You just hoped no one did anything stupid. You hoped there was no one out there starting a campfire, no one driving through town from out of state with no idea where they were, throwing a cigarette out their window. In the evenings, they thought twice about having a second drink or putting themselves in any kind of vulnerable situation. You didn't want to be the person who was drunk or on a sleeping pill when the evacuation orders came through. Those were the people who got stuck in their houses. They'd read about those people.
That was Oakland author Daniel Gumbiner reading from his book Fire in the Canyon. It came out in 2023. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can find more readings by Bay Area authors at KALW.org/New Arrivals. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Well, it's almost about that time. We're excited to announce that next week we'll be dropping the latest season of TBH, our award-winning podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. We'll be airing new episodes every Monday. For now, here's a snippet of the stories to come.
This is TBH. I'm Anthra Gungwal.
And I'm Amalia Madrid Lilly.
TBH is a podcast from KALW by, about, and for teenagers.
And we're about to drop season 5. We're thinking about how we can make change in our communities.
This is a historical event. Tegorte is reclaiming that land back, but we're going to build it from the ground up. You know, our ancestors have been living on it for thousands of years.
We talk about what to do when we're too young to vote.
Kids and education are really important to every district around here. Rallying together, we do have a say, especially because we live here. We should have some power.
And how to make the most of your power when you do become old enough to.
You are not the generation that is going to lose the right to vote because there are forces desperately trying to prevent young people from having a say in this election.
And we're pulling back the curtain on teen dating violence.
When I was a teenager going through it, I had no idea what teen dating violence was. I actually was a victim of gaslighting, so I thought I was crazy.
Hear teenagers' stories on those subjects this season and many more.
Subscribe to TBH wherever you get your podcasts.
That's the 5th season of TBH, Monday morning at 11. And before we leave you, here's some music from a Bay Area band. This is Agnes Twin. They'll be playing at San Francisco's Bottom of the Hill tonight.
What's the hurry? Age doesn't matter. If you wanna play my game, you better reach the mountains. Hold my hand, make me understand. I know.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Aru Nair, Afton Okwu, Julia Haney, Cherie Bishop, James Rowlands, Ganadijo Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
The sun.